The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
When you're ready to let go of your engagement ring, the experts at Worthy can help you turn it into cash fast and risk-free. They do all the work and their competitive auctions get you the best deal possible.
And the very best part about Worthy is that you are in charge of what happens to your jewelry. You set the reserve price, you approve the winning bid, and then you get paid. And if your item doesn't sell for the price that you want, guess what? Worthy sends it back to you at no cost, fully insured.
Over 60,000 people have already sold with Worthy, and they have 2,500 five-star reviews on Trustpilot.
So go visit worthy.com/notsuck and get an extra $100 when your jewelry sells for over $1,500. That's worthy.com/notsuck.
A lot of times the therapists have no idea what's truly going on behind the scenes in the divorce case.
Every spouse is a difficult spouse.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
So, Andrea.
So, Morgan.
It's kind of like spring in Chicago. I mean, some days are kind of like summer. Some days are spring. And like a night ago, I also had a fire going. So I'm kind of confused at what's happening, but I'm okay with it.
I feel like the weather here in Chicago is going through a divorce because it's all over the place.
Yes. Like right? One day it's really angry. The other day it's pretty happy. Right. And then some days it doesn't know what it is.
I mean, do any of us? But no. I agree with you. And I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but it's supposed the high, I think, on Tuesday or Monday of next week is like 31.
What? Really? I don't know. I'm kind of enjoying it. It's like you never know what kind of outfit you can wear.
It's exciting.
You can bring out every type of wardrobe you have in your closet. Could come out in 1 week. I mean, it's pretty awesome.
I like that. I like where you went with this. You're really looking for the sunshine here in the odd gray cloud that is our weather.
Exactly. So it's my turn to talk about something I'm obsessed with. And I was racking my brain and I'm like, what is it?
I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with.
But I have one that I'm obsessed with. I don't know if you've heard of it, but I use it a lot, bringing it to work a lot. Mm-hmm. I know it's another water bottle. I mean, can you ever have enough water bottles? But this one's a little different. It's called the Circle water bottle, but it's C-I-R-K-U-L. I don't know if you've heard of it, but basically what it does is it comes with a filter. You buy the filter. Mm-hmm. The filter goes for about 2 or 3 weeks and you can manually put, it comes with some kind of flavor, whatever filter you buy. And it comes with a flavor. You can put in a lot of flavor or you can just turn it to a little or none whatsoever. But it lasts for a while. And I'm kind of liking the strawberry kiwi. I like water fine too, but it is kind of nice once in a while to have a little bit of a, you know, taste in your water.
How often do you have to change the filter? Like, is it like a humidifier where you got to make sure it's real clean?
Yeah. So they say that the filter can last up to 3 weeks, depending on how much, you know, flavor you're using. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm usually changing them out, you know, 2 weeks, but it's not like you don't wash your water bottle. It's just that you take the filter off and you put your water bottle in the dishwasher and it's clean, et cetera. But then when the 2 or 3 weeks is up, you get a new, you know, I keep wanting to say scent. It's not scent. It's new taste or flavor. And I think that they have some with like caffeine. They have all different kinds. I mean, I found one that I think is pretty good and I'm sticking with it.
Okay, good. Well, hey, as long as you are keeping up your levels of hydration, that is all the world cares about.
Mm-hmm. Because on those 90 degree days that I was at 40 the day before, I really, really got to hydrate.
There you go, girl. Well, I've never heard of this Circle water bottle, but I believe you. And I'm so happy that you're obsessed with it. And if it's changing your life, then it can change. Then it can change all of our listeners, right? Not that we're here trying to influence them. Because that's what we're talking about today in our episode.
Right.
Is how, interestingly enough, and I didn't think about this topic until it was brought to our attention by our guest today. But apparently, some therapists can actually influence how you view your relationship, how you view your marriage, and how you view your spouse. Based on things that your therapist says that can kind of sway you one way or the other. And apparently they're not supposed to do that. Right. So we're going to learn more about this with Dr. Bill Doherty, whom we adore mainly because he told us that we were better than Oprah. Mm-hmm. And also because this guy is the real deal. For those of you who don't remember him from, I think it was last season on our show.
Right.
He is the founder of discernment counseling.
Literally invented discernment counseling.
Yeah.
It's not like he just does it. He's teaching other people his ways because he invented discernment counseling, which I think if you haven't listened to the discernment counseling episode and you're thinking about a divorce or kind of wavering back and forth, that's the episode for you, because I think it is one of the most fabulous options for people that are in that limbo phase.
I think it's also an important episode to listen to really learn about different things that you probably didn't realize you could be doing and should be doing before you jump to the decision of, okay, let's call this thing, you know? So I'm excited to talk to him. I'm also a little nervous because I don't know what he's going to say about, I honestly was thinking back to when I was in therapy pre-divorce, and I'm thinking, did my therapist say things? I'm sure she did. And right. Was that wrong? I don't know. So, all right, let's give this a go. You ready?
Let's do it. I can't wait to talk to him again.
Okay. So we love therapy on our show, and it's always the first step that we recommend in everyone's divorce process. And with that, it's important that we educate our listeners on something that I guess can go on in therapy sessions that could actually be quite harmful.
And what we're going to talk about certainly does not happen in every therapist's office, but it does happen. And I've seen it one too many times, and we felt like it was important to address it.
Okay, so what the hell are we talking about? We are talking about when your therapist makes judgment calls or comments about your spouse or your ex, which could eventually influence your decision on whether or not to get a divorce.
Today, I'm so excited. We are bringing back one of our most favorite guests. I mean, we love our guests in general, but I do think there are a few handful of MVPs, and this is one of them. It's Dr. Bill Doherty. Dr. Doherty is the founder of discernment counseling, which is a unique and highly effective process for a couple to determine whether they're going to go their separate ways or attempt therapy to save their marriage. We had Dr. Doherty on our show last season, and if you haven't heard the episode about discernment counseling and why it's different than every other therapy, you've got to go listen. The other thing that I should mention about Dr. Doherty is he is amazing in his field. He's been on Oprah and he's got the best sense of humor. I mean, before we even get on this, Andrea and I are sitting here in pajamas and he is in a collared shirt making fun of us because we are not glammed up, and I love it.
Yeah. And then he had to mention to us, I put on a clean shirt for this and you guys are sitting over there in your pajamas. So he is serving up the sass right from the beginning.
Am I going to get in here soon or what?
Oh my goodness. Somebody mute that man. No, you're in. You're on. We are so happy that you are back with us. And I have to tell you, my fingers are crossed that you're not going to tell me something terrible about my therapist, like your therapist has been ruining your life. But regardless of that, welcome back to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Thank you. Great to be with you. And the MVP, you know, which you said, you know, for those who don't know, sports most valuable player. And I always wanted to be a professional athlete, but I could hardly play intramural. So I just loved being introduced as an MVP. So thank you for that.
You are our MVP because you, so far you are our only guest, which kind of makes me want to fire every other guest we've had, because so far you are the only guest who has told us that we're better than Oprah. So for that reason alone, you shall remain MVP. Forget your accolades and everything that you've done for the community. You said we're better than Oprah.
A well-placed lie gets me a nomination for MVP.
Flattery gets you everywhere on the show.
Okay, so let's start here. So one first thing today. So, you know, I've been prepping for a trial, so it's really stressful. Client stressed, attorneys are stressed. We're all like, you know, have enough work to sink a ship. And I looked at my calendar and I'm like, oh my gosh, we have Dr. Doherty coming on tonight. This is awesome. I pull out your document that you sent us, which is an amazingly, you know, articulate article that you wrote, and it's got a lot of therapists speak in it. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to peruse this, prep for tonight. Half hour later, here I am like a total loser, underlining your statements. Like, I was into it. I'm super excited to talk about this. And this article specifically that you contributed to writing is called Relationship Undermining Statements by Psychotherapists with Clients Who Present with Marital or Couple Problems. First of all, that's a lot to say, but there's a lot in this. Can you start by kind of giving us the Cliff Note version of this article, high level, of why you did this and what you kind of discovered?
Yeah, so happy to. There's been a kind of a secret among particularly marriage and couples therapists for a long time. One of these things we talk about at coffee or drinks after meetings, and we complain to each other about. So I'm a couples therapist. And that is, when our clients are seeing individual therapists at the same time they're working with us, a lot of times they get pretty negative feedback from their therapist about their spouse. Okay. And that complicates the couple's therapy. Sometimes you're seeing an individual who is struggling in their marriage, and they've gotten impressions from their last therapist, again, who never saw their spouse, right? That's what I'm talking about. Never laid eyes on these people. And they are talking about them having serious mental health issues, for example. So I've been bothered by that, and just about everybody I know who works with couples has been bothered by that. And I decided a couple years ago with a colleague, Steve Harris, to actually do a study. In other words, for once, get past complaining, Bill, and actually find out if there's some data there. Okay. And so what we did was we recruited a national sample of about 100 people, pretty diverse group, who had been to individual psychotherapy about a relationship problem. They may have other problems as well, but one of the main reasons they went was they're having problems in their marriage or their intimate partner relationship. And we asked them a whole bunch of questions about what they recall the therapist did. And a lot of them were positive, you know, expressed empathy and so on. We didn't want to just communicate they were only interested in the negatives. But we had some questions, six questions, which summarize what we believe some therapists say about the other person, about the marriage, without having met the other spouse. So are you ready for what we found?
I'm nervous.
I can't wait.
Okay. So one of the questions was, did your therapist say that your spouse was unlikely to change? This is a big one, right? So you described your emotionally unavailable husband or your on your back wife is mad all the time, and the therapist gives you feedback that, well, you know, this person is not likely to change without having met the person. 64% of nearly two-thirds of our sample said that they heard that from their therapist. Another one, and this one really, really gets me, that your spouse has a personality disorder or other mental health diagnosis. So I've been presenting this data to therapists, and this is published in an academic journal. And so here's what happens. So I say to the room full of therapists, I say, okay, for a husband, wife, you know, heterosexual marriages, you're seeing a wife. What do you think is the therapist's favorite diagnosis of the husband who they never met? And there's this rueful look of people in the room, and they call out narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah, but I thought that every single male in this country who got a divorce in the last 3 years is a narcissist. Is that not the case? Why are you guys laughing? I thought that was like a thing.
I think you should become a therapist. And
Well, just you wait.
So now there's one that recently I've been hearing in addition, and that is, he's on the spectrum, on the autism spectrum, okay? Which means he doesn't do feelings like your favorite girlfriend, okay? Yeah. Maybe he's a normally socialized man who leads with his thoughts, who's much more quick to say what he wants than how he feels, okay? So we're kind of chuckling about it, but the problem with
that, we're both dying right now. We're dying listening.
I'm chuckling because I'm not, because there's so many things running through my mind that I, you know, would love to share out loud, but I don't want to get in trouble legally. So, but you know, I might be a guilty party in some of this. Let's just say that.
Well, yeah, but perhaps. Well, and the reason why the therapists in the room are all kind of looking down is that they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just so we have equal time here, what do you think when a guy goes, again, who's married to a woman, goes to a therapist and then complains that his wife is so up and down emotionally, can't please her, and sometimes she's really nice and sometimes she's just so volatile?
Can I vote on this?
Go for it.
I have a thought too.
Borderline personality disorder.
Exactly. You get the prize. Okay.
If I had a dollar for everything, I can't wait to hear or to tell our listeners what I hear every day. But if I had a dollar for everything that you're saying right now, I would be rich.
I just had to say, it's sad to hear how textbook that I am. Like, this is just, I mean, I never thought that I was a basic B, but here we go. Ugh.
Yeah. So you take a woman who is not very happy in her marriage on her worst day.
Mm-hmm.
And she can seem like, just for your listeners, borderline personality, emotionally volatile, kind of emotionally unstable, up and down, loves you one day, hates you the next day. I mean, that's the sort of, you know, the brief version of borderline personality disorder. So, you know, some people can look that way when they're really unhappy. Mm-hmm. But the therapist is doing this, saying this without ever having met or assessed this person. And the problem with assigning personality disorders is that they are basically almost impossible to change. Not impossible, but they're really, really hard to change. Okay. Somebody is truly a narcissist. It's really, really hard to change. And borderline personality, you know, just takes years of therapy. So what happens is the client goes, wow, it's not my fault. Okay, I'm married to an emotionally impaired person. So their first reaction is like, wow, I have some understanding, I have some insight. And then their second one is hopelessness.
That's interesting.
So think about the autism spectrum, okay? So I have a colleague who did this and he regrets it. You know, it's so tempting, and we could talk later about why therapists do this, because it's very tempting to do. So this woman was describing her husband won't relate to her feelings, he doesn't do feelings, blah, blah, blah. And the therapist suggested that maybe he's on the autism spectrum. And the wife was at first like so relieved, like, it's not me, okay? It's not me, it's him, and maybe I should feel bad for him. Well, the next session she came back in saying she's going to divorce him.
Mm-hmm.
As she processed all of this, she concluded he was never going to change. She could never have an emotionally intimate partner. And so she came back the next week and my colleague went, oh, I didn't mean it. Like, I just was just floating this possibility. And that was contributing to the end of a marriage that might have been survival.
What came to my mind is when somebody, if a therapist slaps a label on the partner whom you're having such conflict with, it takes the responsibility off of your shoulders, which then to me, and I'm not a therapist yet, but then to me, it makes you think, oh, well, then my work here is done. Like, I don't have an issue. I have nothing here to work on, right? Because our marriage wasn't working because he's an autistic narcissist. right?
That's actually a difficult combination to put
together. I would say, I'm thinking, I've never met one of those. But, you know, but I think that that's actually another level of danger, right? Because when we stop wanting to work on ourselves and assume any role that we played in this, let's just say that this couple maybe should get a divorce, right? Maybe that aside. But then it's like, I think that's another level of danger. And then they run into then the next relationship with their attorney, and they come at their attorney guns blazing, right? We've got this diagnosis, but it's not even a real diagnosis.
Right, right.
And I think that,
well, so wait, Dr. Dorder, did you give or share with us the percentage? I think we missed it on it, when the therapist
personality disorder, other mental health diagnosis without seeing the individual, 55%.
Oh my gosh. Ooh. Okay, so for me, legally, I mean, I'm sure you can imagine, but I would say almost close to, if close to every whoever's in therapy on my clients, I would say 40 to 50% of them have a therapist or have had a therapist that has diagnosed their ex or soon to be ex when they have never met them before. And it's one thing that makes me nuts because it empowers them. It sometimes drives them in a bad way, decision-wise. They don't think clearly because they think this diagnosis is out there. Sometimes they amp up the divorce process because they can't help themselves, and they go home to their spouse and they say, oh, I knew something was wrong with you. Guess what? My therapist, who I've been paying for the last, 10 years or whatever it is, says, you're a narcissist or you have borderline personality disorder. Then it just takes the whole divorce animosity up a notch. Wow. And I think it's a big problem. And as a divorce lawyer, if you said that to your divorce lawyer, most good divorce lawyers, we're not going to fight with you because it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. It's not worth trying to dissuade you of that position. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's a very dangerous position for a therapist to take legally.
Not to mention, if you think that you're divorcing someone who has these conditions because your therapist mentioned it, think about how stressed out and how much higher the stakes are going to be with a parenting agreement or anything involving your kids. Right.
Yes.
So, the client has almost made all of this up in their mind. Also, let me ask you this. And a therapist, even if a therapist had seen this person, doesn't it take like an official evaluation
by
a psychiatrist to hand out these diagnoses, or no? Can a therapist? Well,
any licensed mental health professional is trained in basics of diagnosis, but people who do serious diagnosis work, like Alan Francis is the psychiatrist who developed the diagnostic criteria in the psychiatric manual. I heard him one time say that he never diagnoses somebody with a personality disorder in less than 4 sessions. Mm-hmm. 1-to-1, 4 sessions, okay? Mm-hmm. You have to get a lot of data. You have to talk to other people in their lives. You have to, just get a lot of information. Actually in the question we asked our participants, we asked specifically without having met the other person. So we ruled that out. We ruled out that they had done any individual conversations.
I'm just curious if, let's say, somebody is diagnosed with a personality disorder, I just want to know what that session looks like. Like, does the therapist say, well, I have good news and bad news. Let's start with the bad news. You have narcissistic personality disorder, and there's actually no good news. Have a good day. I mean, how does that work? What does that look like?
Very few therapists come out with that. They may be working with somebody who has a lot of life impairment. The only thing that gets real narcissistic personality disorders into therapy is their life is falling apart.
The
therapist helps them with their life falling apart, and then at some point, says things like, so you may have the kind of self-centeredness, it may be something on the spectrum of narcissists. It's a very delicate thing.
So they never say you have it. I'm sorry, I just want to be clear. Like, didn't they never come out and say you have this?
Yeah, no, eventually they would. Yeah.
Okay.
I like that you did this, Bill, because it's kind of interesting because you're kind of taking your own profession to task a little bit, which is kind of a game changer, and I love disruptors in their own, you know, area, which is what you're doing. One of the things that I think legally is dangerous, and one of the ways that I remedy it, is sometimes, you know, what I always say is you're going to your therapist, and if you're there for the right reasons, truly because you want to take, you know, control, you want to be honest, you want to help yourself, you want to make yourself better, it's going to be great. But I have a lot of clients, unfortunately, that go there and they spin their story and they spin it to get what they want out of it. And sometimes it's helpful, but sometimes it's not. And sometimes I see therapists being a big impediment to getting deals done in potentially mediation. And so what I've done for your listeners, if you're thinking to yourself, oh yeah, like my ex is in this therapy and it's empowering them and we can't get anything done because we've got essentially this, you know, the therapist I call sometimes the Wizard of Oz in the background. Sometimes what I do is I actually would ask the mediator, if you're mediating, to be the neutral person, maybe get releases to speak just briefly, because in mediation in Illinois, it's confidential, to speak briefly to the therapist on both sides, just to say, hey, are you seeing this? Are you, you know, what do you feel about these situations? And you know what's shocking when they do that? A lot of times the therapists have no idea what's truly going on behind the scenes in the divorce case. So it's helpful to get everybody on the same page, depending on the case.
Wait, I'm so confused. Morgan, tell me more about this. The mediator is able to speak, like if there's a release that's signed, they're able to speak to each person's therapist. And obviously everyone agrees.
Everyone would have to agree, correct. Because a lot of times what happens is we've got everyone has their own therapist. Everyone's really positional. Everyone's getting the therapy that they're spinning. And really, you know, it could be an issue with co-parenting. It could be a lack of communication. It could be somebody sees it black, somebody sees it white. And sometimes if you're not having somebody like Bill Doherty, who's doing couples therapy, you all need to get on the same page. And you can imagine, Andrea, if you go and tell, you know, person A that the sky is blue, and then your ex is saying the sky is gray, we got to figure out how to get to the middle and figure it out. So that's one way that we can do it. And it kind of gets a little off topic of what Bill's, you know, report is about, but it's kind of goes to the same thing, which is, in my mind, legally, it can be detrimental to, you know, you if you are only presenting your side of the story to the therapist and the therapist is presenting diagnosis on your soon-to-be ex or ex.
Well, so let me go beyond diagnosis, because the other category here I wanted to share is negative motives in the spouse or partner. So did your therapist suggest negative motives? So there's negative behavior, but there's also then negative motives. In other words, I may feel, you know, controlled by you. It's a different thing to think that's what you're setting out to do, that you get up in the morning and that you're trying to control me, okay, as opposed to I feel controlled or intimidated or whatever. And so here's the 62% said that their therapist had suggested negative motives in the spouse.
Can you give us like an example of what a negative motive is? Or like,
yeah, the classic one for a spouse would be this person is controlling me. Okay, they are limiting my options or micromanaging me. Right, I have a controlling spouse. Right, that's a big one. Right, and I might be working with a client and I say, so you feel controlled and give me some examples and blah blah blah. If I then say something like this, ask this question. So why do you think your wife wants to control you so much? You see what I've done? I've now crossed over from your experience of it, of her behavior, to her motives. And there's lots of other ways this could happen. For many people, when they get anxious, they become controlling. Okay, I don't know what's going on. And so I try to ever control the situation. That's not a motive. That's not a control motive. Okay, you have somebody gets angry and as a temper and blows up. This may be mostly an impulse control problem. It may be you know, it's, they don't handle stress in their life and they blow up. And if what I say is your spouse or partner is trying to intimidate you,
right,
I have now attributed a motive, which unless I see them together or I know that person, I don't, that's a big step.
We call that legal conclusion.
Ah, there you go.
In my world. Uh-huh. You can't make that jump. That's for the judge.
But it's very easy to make because my client, and see, a lot of this is driven from my client will like me now because I'm taking their side.
Right.
Okay. And that, but that's not necessarily helping. It usually does not help. In honesty, I want to give you an example of a mistake I made because, you know, I've had a long career and some of these ideas just, you know, crystallized in recent years. And so here's the scenario, a woman going through a divorce. Well, they actually been through a very messy divorce, but they worked it out. I mean, it took about 18 months of legalities. And one of the arrangements, well, I was seeing her in individual therapy, and one of the deals was that, let me see if I get this right now, she paid for the kids' clothing, and she made more money than her husband, so that was the deal. So her husband texts her that the daughter needs a new dress, and he's going to help her get a new dress, and the mother doesn't agree that the daughter needs a new dress. Okay. And so they're talking on the phone about this. And the what the mother reported to me was that the father said, if you don't pay for this, I'm taking you back to court. Like, whoa. So I just said, now it's interesting. It was like 5 minutes into the session. We're just settling. It was my first session of the day. And I said, without getting the context, I said, that's pretty aggressive. Because
right.
You know, we're talking about a darn dress here, okay? It
seems like a harmless statement, right?
Yeah, right. But it seemed that's pretty aggressive. It could have been worse. Well, here was the story as we unpacked it. She said to him, I'm going to withhold some of your child support.
She left that out.
You get the dress. And then he said, well, I'll take you back to court. Okay. Yeah, do you think she maybe provoked that a little bit?
Right. Maybe she was aggressive.
Well, yeah, exactly. So in other words, it was a lot more complicated than she delivered it to me. And then I did a snap thing, which was a mistake.
And then the takeaway is what your snap judgment call had the effect on her is he's aggressive.
Well, right. Right. And fortunately, she had worked with me a lot and I had not done that very much before. You know, I really tried to help her deal with her husband. I tried to understand some of what he was doing is probably coming from his own anxiety, you know, blah. So within about 5 minutes, she had given me the rest of the story.
So I don't want clients, our wonderful listeners, to think that therapy is bad or anything like that, because that's not what we're promoting here. We love therapy. We love therapists, and we love having you, Dr. Doherty, on the show. And you're a phenomenal therapist. Like, you are on top of your game. The question I have is, let's just say one of our listeners is like, oh my gosh, I felt so good because I knew that she was a narcissist. And now I'm questioning everything I've learned from this episode. And not only am I questioning that, I'm questioning now, is my therapist done something wrong? What do you suggest to those type of listeners who are like, ooh, something feels weird now?
Mm. Well, that's a profound question. I'm suggesting that they hold lightly when the therapist says negative things about their spouse. Hold lightly what was said before, hold lightly now, unless the therapist is also expressing compassion for and understanding for their spouse.
And this, we're talking about the spouse that they have not, the therapist has not met. Right. Because it's not, you're not saying that there's some ill intent. It's just that they just take it a step too far.
Well, here's the thing. It's, and this is what we write about in our article. And by the way, I can give you the article is in the public domain. I mean, we
are. Oh, we're going to link it so people can read it.
People can download it, and it's not, you know, it's not terribly technical. And so what we talk about in there, Morgan, is we're not trying to vilify our colleagues, but there, when you're with an individual who is in distress in a relationship, there is a gravitational pull towards adopting their perspective on their partner, and then using, then having your professional knowledge come on top of that. Mm-hmm. It's a pull. You know, I have another program that we could talk about someday called marital first responders. And how do you engage your friend, your sibling, when they are talking about their spouse or significant other? How do you respond as a friend? It's the same thing. You feel like, what a jerk.
I was just going to say that Andrew and I always talk about the worst person you can talk about your problems with is probably your best friend at a bar, because they're going to be like, yes, I always hated that person. You know, they're awful.
Yeah, that you don't deserve that. I did a workshop for therapists recently with this title. My daughter, who knows something about marketing, is helping me with the titles. This title was Poor Baby, What a Jerk Therapy.
I love it.
And so I had 150 people show up at that, as opposed to the boring titles that I come up with. But what I'm saying in understanding of my fellow therapists is, A, we get no training in how to work with an individual around the relationship problems. That's shocking, but there is no training. You, for individual therapy, you get trained to work with somebody's depression, their anxiety, their trauma, their attachment problems. That's what the training is, what the literature is. But they come in for those things, and then they complain about their spouse. Okay.
Of course.
Or they complain about their ex, who they have to work with. Okay. They complain about somebody, and therapists, unfortunately, are not trained, and so everybody makes it up on their own. And with this person in front of you who is hurting in this relationship, it's very tempting to just become their, what I call, emotional gladiator in that relationship.
When someone's looking for a therapist, this brings up another point, and I know Andrea has a question as well. That was one thing I had underlined in your article, was that, you know, individual therapists truly are not trained in couples counseling or marital problems, technically. So would it be helpful for somebody to find somebody who is a therapist, but also has some kind of counseling with marriage in it?
Yeah, that would be helpful. That would be helpful. However, I have to say that, so yes, in general, but there's still a strong temptation when you're with an individual to take their side, even if you're, because if you have two people in the room, to do your job, you have to understand both people. You to just do your job.
Oh, but yes.
One person in the room, it's not as apparent that your job is to try to understand with compassion somebody who you don't know and who seems to be the source of the distress of your client.
It's amazing you just said that too, because as divorce lawyers, we don't always get to see the other side. We get to hear all about, you know, my client's perspective. And I always go into even more details than maybe other attorneys do. I want to know what makes that person, the ex, tick. I want to know what the triggers are, because if I know that, I can do a better job. But what I will say is, when we get to mediation or we get to litigation and I get to experience that ex, it helps me so much more get to a deal, because I at least know what is making them tick a little more and what's agitating them by just reading their face in that room. And that's kind of what the therapist is not getting when I, you know, similar to me, until I get to that step.
That's right. That's right.
And to be clear, when you know, when you discover, Morgan, what makes that person tick, you're using that knowledge to not set them off. You know, you use that, right? Because I don't want people to think like, oh, do attorneys go in because that once she gets this information, she's going to piss off my ex. No. Nobody comes to a deal when everyone's angry and emotionally charged. you use that information to know, okay, this is what's really important to this person, and this is what's important to you. And guys, actually, there's a way that we can come to a solution here. What I want to know is, we're talking a lot about what therapists are not supposed to do and all the ways that they can influence us in a harmful way. What the hell is a therapist meant to do? How neutral do we want these people to be? Because I know that being on the other side of that, I roll into therapy often and you present what's going on and you're like, okay, so what do you think? And now, you know, that's not true. Now I think I've been in enough therapy to know that that's not their job. You work things out. But I know that a lot of people, especially when the stakes are really high and they're going through a divorce, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Let's just say for argument's sake, they're already going through a divorce. If they're mm-hmm. listening to this mm-hmm. show, there's a good mm-hmm. chance they're already in it. How is a therapist supposed to navigate these situations when they're dealing with somebody who is really charged and wants to have these answers of, well, what do you think about him?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, this is some of what I'm trying to teach therapists these days. And that is, you begin, of course, with compassion and empathy for your client, their genuine stress. You empathize with their feelings. And in doing that, there are skills in doing that, that where you do not say directly, indirectly, you agree with their perspective on their partner. Okay.
How do you say that?
Well, you don't say it that way, but you say, so that phone call, or this exchange of texts that was so upsetting to you, Andrea, with your ex or soon to be ex, I can really see how that really upset you, set you off. It makes sense that you were distracted the rest of the day, you know, mm-hmm. that was a blow. You thought you were, you know, trying to get something constructive and you felt like you got an ice ball in the face. Okay. That was really hard. You see, and I'm with you empathically. Mm-hmm. I did not then say he threw an ice ball in your face. What he did to you there was blah, blah, blah. Now, there are exceptions to this. If you showed me the text and he was cursing you and calling you the most vile, in other words, there's some obvious way out stuff, okay, that, you know, that I would comment on. But mostly it's not that, okay? And mostly the client is giving me act three, scene two of an ongoing relationship that's been around for years. And I know there's a lot that happened before this. Okay. This is not, you're just talking to me about how a stranger on a train treated you. Okay. So I empathize with your feelings. I try to help you understand what happened, including your contributions to the ongoing dynamic.
Okay.
And it may be that in the prior text that exchange that you're not showing me, you did the same thing. Okay. I have to hold that possibility out. Or you have put up with a certain negative behavior for all these years and didn't challenge it until you said, I want to divorce you.
Right. Okay.
And now the challenge is doing this in a compassionate way with somebody who wants to learn about their own contributions to complex relationship problems. That's my job, is to help them understand the relationship and their own contributions so that they can be healthy in this relationship or leave in a healthy way and be better in their next relationship. Okay. And if all I stress is that you've been putting up with a very difficult person, and I don't help you look in the mirror about how you've contributed,
right,
I'm not helping you. I don't think I'm really helping you. Now, and what I'm saying is that, and I've had a lot of experience doing this, people ultimately, they deeply appreciate this. The client I'm referring to, who I had the slip with your, that was aggressive, one of the reasons she saw me was she knew I didn't take her off the hook about this very bad dynamic between her and her ex-husband. And in fact, I, at one point, she wanted a referral to a women's therapy group, and I sent her there. And she actually quit the group because she said people were too nice to her all the time. They just took her side. They just took her side. And she knew she had a role in this, okay?
That's funny because one of the things that Andrea and I talked about choosing an attorney was you don't want to choose someone that agrees with you every time. Mm-hmm. That is a bad, a yes man is a bad attorney for you because you don't need that yes man. You need the real man or real woman that will tell you what's right and wrong and how it's going to go down so that you're not shocked when things happen. And I think the same for therapy. I mean, if you're truly there to fix your situation and yourself, then you shouldn't be upset if something isn't exactly the way that you wanted it to be, right?
Right. And ultimately, you come back for more. Because so, and I take this as a truism, as say in marriage, and every spouse is a difficult spouse. We all bring
on the day, right?
We're all challenging for somebody to be close to in this very intimate relationship. Okay. And if you accept that without shame, then you can ask yourself, well, how have I been contributing to this dynamic? And by the way, I don't mean 50-50. No, I don't even know what that means, but meaningful way. Any pattern that has existed for a long time in a couple relationship, including in relationships between ex, any patterns existed for a long time, both people have contributed in a meaningful way. Now, we can talk about the exceptions of a highly coercive, control, violent, and you know, I'm not going there. There are, you know, people should be locked up for what they do. But I'm talking about the most of it. We regularly all contribute. And going back to what I was saying about the way in which the spouse who you haven't met is disparaged. One of the things people to look for is whether their therapist speaks about their partner or their ex in a complex way. So here's an example. Therapy 101 is somebody comes in, they lead with anger. That's a hard feeling. Anger and frustration. Mm-hmm. You always look for, you hear that, you look for the soft feelings under the hard feelings. If somebody's angry, that's real. They need to understand. But they're often feel hurt. They feel abandoned. They feel, you know, alone. There's soft feelings under the hard feelings. If you're frustrated, there's something underneath you're frustrated about. Okay. Mm-hmm. So a good therapist, when a client says, I blew up at my kids, or I blew up at this, blah, blah, and I just was, you know, you hear it. And then you try, well, what was going on underneath? You're having a hard day. You're feeling like you're a bad mother, a bad father, you know, all that stuff. We go to the soft feelings. Does the therapist do that about your spouse? Okay. Do they raise the possibility? Did they ask the question, what else might have been going on for your spouse or your ex when they did that? Is it possible that that they get controlling when they're anxious? Mm-hmm. Okay, could that be a possibility? What I'm doing is I'm referring to somebody who's connected to my client in a way that they're not a cardboard character. Mm-hmm. They're complex. My client is complex. We're all complex. That's what you're looking for, as opposed to here's the diagnostic label or they have bad motives.
Morgan, it reminds me of the episode we recorded not long ago with Joy about mediation. And one of her tips is you might not have respect for the person you're divorcing, but you need to treat them with dignity. Mm-hmm. Right? Because we are all complex individuals. And I think that what's interesting about this conversation we're having right now is that for me, everything comes back to how dangerous it is when we are putting these labels and assumptions and motives on the person that we're going through this conflict with, because we're relieving ourselves of any role that we've played in this. And we're also, we're allowing ourselves to go into that world of like black and white thinking. He's bad and I'm good, right? And that's not it. I mean, we always say this, divorce is 50 shades of gray minus all the sex scenes in most cases, you know, but it's like, it's not that simple. And that's, I think we're saying, like, you cannot oversimplify a person. Like, well, she is borderline and she did this and she did that. And so therefore it's never going to work. And, you know, buckle up for a bumpy ride ahead of you. And all that does is send these people into Morgan's office ready to roll.
Right. So Dr. Doherty, you know, we love, I'm sure you know, we love action steps on our show, because a lot of times we talk and we worry that sometimes our listeners are so overwhelmed that it's like spinning in their head. So and that's normal. That's what a lot of people go through going through a divorce. So give us three action steps of something that people should look for to make sure that they're in the right kind of therapy and they've chosen the right kind of therapist for them.
Well, I would say it might be very helpful for, if you, particularly when you're doing, starting with the therapist, to say that you are looking for input in a way that you understand your spouse as a complex person. You want to treat them with respect and dignity, and that you do not want to just make them the bad guy.
Interesting.
I don't see myself as the good guy and my wife or ex as the bad guy. And I hope in the work we do, you can help me I'm not asking just to take my side.
So that's putting it back on us. And, yes. Right. And so what, that's interesting, because basically what you're saying is a lot of this is up to you, right?
Unfortunately, what I'm saying is the suction pull in individual therapy is towards some of this disparaging of your spouse and taking you off the hook. I hate to say that that's the most common, but it is. It's not universal. If you don't have a therapist who does that, good for you, but it's pretty common. It's kind of like if you go to a doctor, a lot of people are now informed enough to know they have to advocate for themselves, right? Right. And so here I'm suggesting, and why? Because a lot of doctors traditionally were trained to say, I'm the boss and, you know, I'll tell you what to do. That's changing, but that's historically a problem in the profession, right? What I'm now saying is that we have a problem in the profession of psychotherapy, of a tendency to side with our client against their partner or ex in a way that's not helpful. I'm saying that is built in, unfortunately, not universal, but it's sort of like the authoritarian doctor. Okay, so when you empower yourself with your doctor, you say, okay, I hear you on that. I want some more conversation about the side effects of this medicine. I hear you that your patients do fine. Before I go on something, I want more information. You don't just...
Well, just like what I do, the problem is it'd be way easier for me to just agree with my clients. So much easier.
Yeah.
The problem for me is down the road, it's going to bite me and it's going to make my clients so upset if they feel that they don't know what's going on. But I think it's such a temptation for therapists just to always agree or take that side. And I know a lot of our listeners who go to therapy probably need that cheerleader. They need that cheerleader in a lot of, extenuating circumstances. But on the flip side, if they're wrong or they're not looking at it right, I hope that a therapist would say that.
Yeah. So the cheerleader, I can be your cheerleader without taking your side against somebody.
That's a good point.
I'm also wondering, Morgan, is it that they need a cheerleader or do they want a cheerleader?
Another good point. Yeah. You know, I think it is case by case, but I do know that the worst thing, it's like nails on a chalkboard when I hear, is when someone comes in and says, you know, my therapist has said that, you know, my ex is bipolar, or I've even had bipolar, which is just insane. I'm like, first of all, they're not capable of diagnosing that, number one. But I, you know, I can't say that. And then I've even had people like past the point of divorce saying, I knew something was wrong and my therapist has validated everything I felt so far because they are borderline. And so, you know, not always helpful, but interesting to say the least. And I'm so glad we're doing this episode with you.
Oh, can I give you a little unsolicited input, Morgan?
Please.
Okay. Because I run into this and I say, okay. Did your therapist ever meet your spouse or ex? I mean, was it? No, I never did. Okay. And maybe they're right. I'm not, you know, I couldn't say one way or the other. But I've learned to be a little cautious when therapists suggest a diagnosis of somebody they haven't met. So I just offer that for what that's worth. I've just learned to hold it lightly.
I like that advice.
As opposed to they worked with you for 2 years, both together.
Yeah, that's totally different. I agree. Because then I perk up a little bit. If the couple's been with the therapist for many years and says something, I'm a little bit more in tune. But I like your advice to me, and I will take that. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's also important that everyone keeps in mind that if you are in an unhappy and unhealthy marriage, which goes, you know, both people play a role in this, or you are going through a divorce, no one is their best selves during this time.
Yeah.
And I think that it's very hard to look at us as characteristics and not as like people, right? Like we all have bad days. You can meet, even if, you know, a couple's therapist meets people under like extenuating circumstances and the stakes are high, they could be like, yeah, Andrea came off like a bitch. I divorce her too. Well, yeah, because we're sitting in a couples therapy session and we've been arguing for months. So I'm not going to show up like my best self. And right. I think like that's what's so tricky about all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I get both sides of it. I get the person who rolls in who wants to be told, you know, you're right, this is what you need. But it's just, oh my gosh.
I have a colleague, Andrea, who what you said reminded me of. He's worked pretty much exclusively as a psychologist with divorcing folks. And he has this saying that he never diagnoses somebody with a personality disorder who is going through a divorce. Ever.
That's so smart. That is so smart.
Because he's seeing them at that moment.
Yeah, right.
And he just will not do it.
I mean,
maybe there should just be a blanket diagnosis for everyone going through a divorce. Everyone is,
yeah.
You know, everyone is X, and we'll reevaluate when you get done.
Right, yeah, exactly. We should start that. Exactly. Let's stop talking about it now while everyone's listening. Let's just come back and we'll say, okay, we have the term, everybody. Because I'm telling you, when I was going through it, I could have been labeled every single one. I mean, like we talk about this when we close our show, Morgan, sometimes it's day to day or hour to hour. So there could be.
I'm wondering what personality are you right now?
I don't know. Manic right now. I'm feeling all kinds of things, but what I mean, honestly, you catch me on a bad Monday. Mm-hmm. It's like,
Back up. And then if we don't have the context, so if I'm your therapist, I have a context. You're not always that way, and I get some of your history, but if I'm seeing your spouse or your ex, who selectively talks about what you're like on Mondays, okay, and edits out not necessarily intentionally, but edits out the good things.
Yep.
Because particularly if you're the one who initiated the divorce, you edit your story of the relationship to justify why you're leaving. This is really human nature, okay? This is what we call motivated reasoning. You leave out the really wonderful parts because you would feel really too sad about that. So you emphasize, it's like leaving a job. You emphasize why it's not working.
Exactly. So let's do like a round robin style recap, because we threw a lot of information out at our listeners, and I want to make sure that they walk away from this episode knowing that they're walking away with knowledge, right? Because we want them to not suck at getting divorced. So, okay, I'll start. You have to make sure that your therapist and you are looking at yourself and the person that you're looking to divorce as a complex individual, right? What else? What else do we need to make sure we're doing?
I got one. And maybe it's the main one. If your therapist gives you a diagnosis of your ex that they have not met, please take it with a grain of salt. That doesn't mean your therapist is a bad person, but just know that that's not a valid diagnosis, truly. Bill, what you got?
I got how you two listen really well.
We aced our test.
Yeah. I mean, we might be in pajamas, but it looks like we're still awake. We're still with it.
Well, I will add after that compliment there that to be aware that just as you can think of why you act badly sometimes, it coming from multiple reasons, think about your ex or your current spouse in the same way, and ask your tell your therapist you're not interested in beating them up. You would try to want to understand them just like you want to understand yourself.
That's important. And that there's the work on ourselves is never done. And the reason why this can be really dangerous is if you are being armed with information that's not really rooted in any kind of truth, they're just going, this therapist is going off of assumptions and judgments that you've made, that you've delivered to them. You are then running to your attorney with all of this, mm-hmm. which is not only are you wasting precious billable hours giving your attorney all of these diagnoses, right, about your ex, but you are also setting the stage to have a much longer and much more expensive divorce. Am I right, Morgan?
Yeah, I would say most of the time that's accurate. Yep.
So this is like, I mean, pay attention. And we're doing this to help you. And we're not saying that, oh, if you've bashed your ex in a therapy session, you're a terrible person. We have all done that. But yes. We're just trying to offer you some guidance on how you can handle this situation the smartest way possible, right? Okay, Bill, is there anything? We're going to put links to this article in the show notes. We will put links for everybody to find you online in the show notes. Is there anything else that we need to leave our listeners with before we bid you adieu for tonight?
Well, a link to discernment counseling.
Yes, sir.
Discernmentcounselors.com, where they can get help around making choices about their marriage. But I just want to say that the goal of this thing called discernment counseling that we've talked about before is not only clarity about a decision about whether to divorce or work on the marriage some more, but we say based on a deeper understanding of what's happened to your marriage and each person's contributions to the problems.
Yeah, I love it. I love discernment.
So what a more complex understanding, a deeper understanding, what's happened to our relationship and each of our contributions. Because then if you go ahead with the divorce, you're prepared to do something better in the future. And so that's the opposite of what happens sometimes in individual therapy.
Yep.
But the other thing I want to just draw from our conversation, and it just occurred to me for the first time when you posed these questions to me about how can people be good consumers of therapy, because that's not in the article. The article is for therapists.
That's
so
true.
You kind of drew out of me that just as we have to be informed, empowered consumers of medical care, we have to do the same with therapy.
Hey, that could be a whole other article. A whole other article that you write. And I think that maybe we get a little bit of credit at the bottom of that one.
Absolutely, you do.
Bill, as always, it was such a pleasure chatting with you. You look dapper. Your words have been informative and inspiring. And our listeners are going to be so much better for hearing this conversation. So thank you.
Well, it's a joy to be with both of you. And the first time I looked better than you guys.
Oh, God. Yeah, we don't look so good, but we're going to get tomorrow. We're going to start over.
I loved that conversation that we had. I think that it's going to really help inform a lot of listeners on what they can do differently so that they can have a healthier outcome. But look, that was a lot. That was a lot of information. If, you know, if we were playing a drinking game where we took shots every time we said the word therapist or narcissistic personality disorder, I'd be dead by now. So, you know, luckily we weren't playing that game. But yeah, guys, if you are like barely hanging on because you're thinking, oh man, I thought this was going to be a light episode about, you know, shitty therapists. Sorry, but you needed to hear this. It's important. And like, this is why we have the show, right? We want to give you the information that you need in the most entertaining way possible with a dose of empathy, because ultimately we're here to help you not suck at getting divorced. And part of that process is knowing the role that you could possibly play in all of this and knowing things that you're saying to your therapist and being aware of things that your therapist is saying back to you.
Yeah. And you know, every episode we do, you may not like the information you get. You just might not. And when we got off with Bill Doherty, we talked about that this might be some controversial topics for therapists and maybe for people going through it, but that's okay. Because Andrea and I are here and committed to provide you with knowledge. And what you do with that is all about your own personal story. And we just want to put it out there, give you the power, and you can roll with it however you want. If you have questions about this episode or need anything, DM us. We always respond. And remember, divorce is a marathon. Sometimes it's day by day. Sometimes it's hour by hour. And if you're sitting like us in your pajamas, and tomorrow looks like a better day, that's okay. That's all right. That's why we do this show.
If you're listening to this episode on a day when you could be diagnosed with having narcissistic personality disorder, borderline disorder, or manic, we get you. That's okay too. There are going to be days where you're like, I don't know that I can do this today. And you know what? You might not be able to. And as a reminder, those are not the days when you make big decisions. On the days when you feel like you cannot sign on the dotted line, then maybe you shouldn't. Take a beat, take a breath, just like what we talked about a few weeks ago in our episode with Lynn Goldberg from the Breathe app. There are tools in place to help you get it together on those days when you need that. Do what you can. And we hope that our show is offering that extra dose of support and guidance that you are looking for. Please, if there's anything that we can do to support you, let us know. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening to us. Give us a rating, give us a review. It helps us continue to book the caliber of guests that we work so hard to bring you. Tell everybody you know about the show. We are here to help you, your dog walker, your manicurist, maybe even your best friend, whoever it is. We have got them. And you know what? We've got you too. You can do this. We are with you every step of the way.